Good morning. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Perek Chav Vav. I haven't been gone that long. Perek Chav Vav, we're up to the 26th Perek here in the Tiferes Yisrael. The 25th Perek that we learned last time focused on the time which was chosen for Matan Torah and the suitability of the specific time chosen for Matan Torah. So the third month, the 50th day, the idea of an ace of a time, of a specific time for Torah. Today, what he's going to deal with is the other dimension, which is space, the place where the Torah was given. Now that we discussed the suitability of the time for the giving of the Torah, we have to look at the suitability of the specific place for the Torah being given. And that's what this perek is dedicated to. So everybody knows that the specific place where the Torah was given was the Midbar. We get a little more specific and we speak about it being Midbar Sinai and the various names. So basically what this perek is going to do is going to talk, its main focus or main central thrust is going to be the idea of Midbar. Then it's going to talk about another chazal which speaks about it being the Midbar Be'eshuv HaMayim, and he's going to elaborate on that Lefi Darko. And finally, he's going to deal a little bit with the Gemara that speaks about the five different names which were given to the Midbar associated with the Torah. So the Maral begins, we'll just bring the Medrash, and then we'll talk about his understanding of the idea of Midbar. It says, the Medrash that he brings to start of Yisu Midbar V'Arav Chatzerim Teshav Kedar Yarainu Yesh Ve'Sala. What is this is a medrash in the beginning of Bamidbar, Parshas Bamidbar, Sefer Bamidbar, Vayidaber Hashem El Moshe Bamidbar Sinai. Bamidbar, by the way, Parshas Bamidbar is always read when? The Shabbos before Shavuos. It's always the Shabbos before Shavuos, pretty much always the Shabbos before Shavuos. And so the medrash in the beginning of Bamidbar speaks about how Hashem spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu in the Midbar, even though you could have had that discussion in many different places in the Torah that preceded that as well. So the Medrash brings a mushal, a metaphor, a parable. Nasi shenichnas leMedina. There was a Nasi, a president who entered a Medina, a state. V'roi se bnei haMedina, ubarcho mipanav. The people who lived there saw him, and they ran away. They thought he was going to change healthcare. Nichnas leShnia. He went into another Medina, ubarcho milfanav. They ran away from him too. Nichnas leIr Chareva. He came into an abandoned, destroyed city. They came out to greet him. They were praising him. They were thrilled to see him. The cities that he came to previously that were established rejected him. Didn't want him to come and change their situation. The empty, desolate city, they were thrilled to see him. Look, at least he's here. Right? He's going to come. He's going to bring something in. Amar Anasi Zuhir Taiva Mikola Medinas. This city is better than all the other ones. Kanani Baine Kise Vekanani Dor. Here I will build my throne. Here I will live. That was what he said. You know, there's a story that goes as follows, that the Beis Halevi of Yosef Dev Halevi Soloveitchik was offered Rabbonus in city where the Malbim was the Rav. The Malbim had died, and a year later they looked for a Rav, and they invited the Beis Halevi to be the Rav. Beis Halevi, who ultimately was known as the Rav of Brisk, which was his successful tenure, had a difficult life. He had a lot of challenges in his various positions that he had before then. So they invited him to be a Rav there in the city of the Malbim. So he said, you know, there was a lady that Leilein Rachman al-Itzlan, she lost her husband, young man. She lost her husband, a young man. And the first week after he died, she was, you know, completely, obviously, beside herself. Friday night came time to make Kiddush. She probably didn't know what to do. She said, I need a man of the house. What am I going to do? How am I going to manage? She had no man of the house. She made Kiddush. She made Maitzi. Matzah Shabbos, she made Havdalah. She struggled through the next week again, like, what am I going to do over here? How can I do this? I need a man of the house. A year later, you know, they suggested maybe a shidduch, you know, have somebody make kiddush, have somebody make havdalah. She said, well, I know already how to make kiddush and havdalah. You know, it's not an issue anymore. I figured out how to do it myself. So he said, if you would have invited me a couple of weeks after the Malbim died, I would have thought about it. Now you don't need a rabbi anymore. Right, if you manage for a year without a rabbi, I'm worried that I'll be trying to come in where something else is there. Right, so that was his response to the invitation, and then of course, in general, you understand that this is to some degree always going to be true. The more established, the more you have something, the more difficult it is to be able to bring something in. Sometimes you have an organization that functions, and then the corporate headquarters or the board decides, they should bring in a CEO. They should bring in somebody on top. And what happens is nobody welcomes it, right? Everybody says, well, I don't understand. Till now I took care of this. This person taking it. Now this guy's going to come and going to tell us what to do. He's going to tell us what to do. Oftentimes that is going to breed tremendous resentment. But if you had somebody who was in that position already, right, and now it's empty and now it's needed, or there was nobody, there was like tons of stuff which it was obvious to the people themselves that there was a problem and a gap, a void that needed to be filled, then they look for it and they welcome it. The Medrash here, of course, the mushal of the Medrash is that very same thing. You have a city that's developed, that's running its thing, and now suddenly the central government wants to locate here. It's going to undermine all the existing structures, everything which is here already. They're not too excited about it. But in a place which is empty, which has nothing going on, we'll be very excited to have somebody come in here and to develop it. Says the Medrash, so the same thing is true. Sheba HaKadosh Baruch Hu Layam Barach Milfana. Very interesting choice that the Medrash says. We just finished with Pesach. Hayom Rav Ayonis. The sea saw and ran away and fled. Right? Hayardein tisoy locher. The Yardein turned on its heel. Heorim roktu chelim gvais kunas. And the mountains, they jumped, they danced, the hills, like sheep. They were all running away. HaKadosh Baruch Hu milifnei adayin. For before the Rabban Hashem's coming, everything runs, so to speak, in the opposite direction. They don't want to have him there. They don't want to have Hashem settle there. The expression, right? We understand it. We read the Tillim, we read it, of course. The idea is, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is coming, so we part ways, we allow him, we welcome him to go through. But on the other hand, there's a certain literal reading of it, which is, Hashem's coming, get me out of here, right? I don't want to have any, I want to move away from him, get out of his way. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, however, needs a place to be welcomed. He needs something that won't get out of his way. But the sea ran away, like the first inhabited city, and the mountains ran away, like the second inhabited city. Bolu Midbar Chareva, but when he came to the empty desert, Kodmu Isai, they greeted him, they welcomed him, as it says, Yisu Midbar V'yarav Chatzirim Teishev Kedor Yarenu Yesh Veisela. Omar, he said, Zu Ha'ir Taiva Mikol Amadinais. Kanani Baina V'dar B'Seche. This is the best place for me. Here I will build and live and I will reside inside. And that brought great joy to the Midbar, as it says, Yisusem Midbar V'tzia Ad Kan. What's the idea? What's the idea? Torah, the presence of the Ribono Shel Olam, is of course a very significant and overwhelming presence. When you consider, for instance, what we learn in the Mishnah or the Braisa, the end of Pirkei Avos, about Kachi Darko Shel Torah, Pas Bamelach Toicha L'mayim B'Mesura Tishtav Al Oretz Tishan, in a certain practical way and in a certain idealistic way, the way of Torah means eating a little bit of bread with salt, a little bit of water, sleeping on the ground. Torah is a consuming passion. It's a consuming passion. Loi b'shamayim hi, v'loi me'ever layam hi. It can't be found with people. It says, in the fullest sense, Torah in its fullest sense can't be found with people who, of course, are b'shamayim, who are arrogant, and not even with me'ever layam, not even with import-export businessmen. Right, as the Rambam says, if a person wants to really be zocha bekeser Torah, really wants to gain the crown of Torah, they can't think, I'll have Torah and I'll have this and I'll have that. Right? It has to be a single, all-consuming passion to have it to the crown of Torah. I'm not talking about, of course, a person can have some level of Torah. A person can fulfill the mitzvah of learning Torah every day and every night, right? Before they go to work and when they come back from work. and even if they're going to strive to be extremely, extremely successful and prosperous in everything which way, it can happen. But the crown of Torah, the fullest connection to Torah, is an overwhelming commitment. And so, the Torah is not so necessarily easily welcomed. Person wants to present the thing of Torah, which is, you know, practically for us. Right? Well, one second, you know, how about the time that I like to spend for myself? How about, you know, these other things, you know, the Torah which says, you know, Loyomu Sefer HaTorah Hazeh Mipicha V'Agitza V'Yem V'Lal, the Torah shouldn't leave your lips and you should be involved in a day and night, right? Does that mean even on Sunday afternoons during the football season? You know, it takes over. It potentially takes over. And again, beyond the practical to the idealistic, the Torah represents the godly, as we've learned so many times here in the Tiferes Yisrael. And on the other hand, you have a world which represents something different, which represents physicality. So of course, our goal is to have the Torah come to roost within the world. But is the world welcoming it so much? So, you know, the Torah didn't stay in the desert. Just like the king's capital city becomes the place, not that the king rules over his capital city. The capital city is the home terrain. And from there, it's supposed to somehow, you know, go on and go outward. From here, he rules elsewhere. But to have the place that he can call home, the place that he can call home is the Midbar. And I would suggest, perhaps, that to some degree, right, the Midbar, what does the Midbar represent? The Midbar represents that which isn't built up about this world, that which isn't developed in this world. It's tzia, it's shmama, it's empty, it's desolate. The more, right, remember the expression of the Rabbeinu Bachya in the Cheves Halvavas, the more that the Yishuv develops, the more that the settlement develops physically, the more that the seichel, the more that the intellectual, spiritual component goes charev, ends up being left to some degree desolate and not developed. So the Midbar, which doesn't have competition from the building and development and the proprietary goals of man, person's not there trying to develop fields or skyscrapers or anything else, there, with man's worldly ambitions not present, with the material of the world not present, there the Torah can come to rest. And that becomes its home terrain. And from there, yes, of course, it's going to radiate outward to include the Yishuv. Again, the Torah was just given at Har Sinai. And in a sense, again, that's parallel to the fact that the crown of Torah might exist with a Moshe Rabbeinu, who abandons the entire world. He's the human equivalent of a Midbar. And in fact, Chazal say that, Umi Midbar Matana. Who will have the Matana of Torah? A person who makes himself like a Midbar. Hefker Lakoil, who gives up on these ambitions in a certain sense in any other realm except Torah. But does the Torah remain only with Moshe Rabbeinu? Or Moshe Rabbeinu becomes the source from which Torah will be able to go every place else? But he has it to the nth degree, because he's wide open to it. Wide, wide open to it. That's the core idea here of the Torah being given in the Midbar. Now, interestingly, in the Midrash it contrasts it to the sea and to the mountains, not to the cities. Right? The metaphor we understand. The inhabited city doesn't welcome it. The city which is open, but it compares it to the seas and to the mountains. And here the Maral says, following the way we see things, no pun intended, is that because the Yam represents the sea, in the thinking of the Maral, often represents Chumri, the physical and the material. And in fact, we know that when the world was overtaken by its physicality, what happened? So the boundaries of the sea were broken, and the sea spilled over, and the whole world became covered with water. That represents the ultimate of chaimer, of physicality. And Maral explains, although less here but more elsewhere, as Rabbi Hartman cites in his notes, the mountains are also representing to some degree the greatest degree of physicality, because they are thick, high, tall earth. You know, that's what it is. Now, there's an ambiguity there because, as you know, all the great things that happened to the Jewish people happened on mountains. Har Sinai, Har Habayis, right? You know, Har Grizim and Har Evel. Chazal say it was always on a mountain. A mountain, right, is you know, maybe a little bit off the ground too. You know, it's part of the earth. It brings us a little bit closer to the, you know, to ascendancy, to the heavens, higher up. However, in any case, well, this is the way the Medrash makes this metaphor, this comparison, and speaks about this possibility of indeed growing beyond that the Midbar was welcoming because of the fact that it literally just opened itself up completely to welcome the Torah within it. Please.
We have a mashal here of three types of things required in the giving of the Torah. One of them being water, Aish, and Midbar.
Yeah.
So water is something that it never contains, it always is contained when it takes the shape of the container it's in.
Yeah.
So in that sense, since it's affected, it's not affecting, it's not containing, it's being contained. It's analogous to physicality. It also is analogous to Torah in other contexts. It always starts high, goes
right
downward, and so on.
Right.
So how do we understand that in one context is one end of the spectrum is like Homer, another context is on the other end of the spectrum, like Torah, which has no physicality?
Great question. Mayim, used as a metaphor, is an ambiguous metaphor. And in fact, it's all over the place. And Chazal say it, and they speak to some degree of it as being a duality. What's the great example of that is that Chazal say, Midrashim say it, the Zohar speaks about it, more great significance, is that in the days of Noach, there could have been a Torah that was brought down to the people. In fact, Noach, according to these mystical sources, Noach had the same Sherish Neshama, the same root of the Neshama of Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? Noach was born Mohul, was born circumcised, right? And things like that. And it could have been the time for the Torah to be given after 10 generations in the world. But instead of the Mayim of Torah being brought down, Benachas, instead what came down was the Mayim, the water of the Mabul. That water is often the greatest symbol of blessing that comes from the heavens. But on the other hand, it also was the most destructive force that came down upon us from the heavens. So there is a duality to it. And in Torah itself, there's a duality. Torah itself is called sometimes the tree of life, some chayim, or it could be, heaven forbid, a stam of us. So you will never find, I think, things that don't have the duality and that don't have the ambiguity. But the sea itself, not water per se, but the sea itself is more often than not, I think perhaps maybe less of a duality. The sea does represent certain chumris, a certain physicality that we need to overcome.
Is it like many things where a certain amount of something can be good for you? You could have a certain vitamin or something that's, if you have way too much or in wrong proportion,
I don't know that it's a matter of quantity. I think usually when it comes to Torah, it's more of context than intention.
Yeah, it's a misuse of something.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Okay. So the Midbar welcomes the Torah. And we have to, and as the Maharal says, you have to understand by nature, anything which is created by Hashem should welcome HaKadosh Baruch Hu, unless it had developed its own chumrius, its own independence, which makes it necessarily resistant to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Remember, and again we'll conclude this portion with this, but the first expression of resistance to Hashem was when HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked the earth to produce plants. Remember, and how it produced those plants. That's not Midbar. That's the opposite of Midbar. Right? When Hashem started to develop a large portion of the surface of the earth by having it bring forth things, that's making the desert bloom. Right? That's when that became chumrias. That's when that became physicality, and therefore to some degree resistant. And that's where the challenge to HaKadosh Baruch Hu's management of the world really began. Okay, so the Midbar remains the place which is open and available in that sense for Torah.
Yeah, to what extent was it important that the land wasn't affected by the Mabul? Isn't Eretz Yisrael the one place that didn't change physically, I guess?
Right, to the same extent. Yeah.
That it was that also lent itself to.
Correct. Same.
To the giving of the Torah.
Yes. Yes. Or to the implementation of the Torah. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. Good. Very good. Good comparison.
But don't we also have Israel going between the status of desert and the status of being developed and flipping back and forth between? Is there like a commentary that when that we didn't?
Shmama, that the land will be left desolate when the Jewish people aren't there. That the development of Eretz Yisrael is supposed to be specifically, very good, the development of Eretz Yisrael is supposed to take place specifically within the context of the Jewish people being upon it. So that's not a pre-existing, I think you're saying something very good, it's not a pre-existing development that is going to have these same struggles to be overtaken, but the, you know, very much the opposite. It will only develop in the framework, in the context of that which exists already. Of that which exists already. Okay. So that's basic number one, the midbar that welcomes the Torah. Uve medrash oy, and he brings a second medrash, also there from the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. Bishloisha dvarim nitna ha-Torah. The Torah was given with three things: the midbar, the eish u'vamayim, in the desert with fire and with water. The midbar, as it says, they came to the midbar Sinai. With fire, as it says, Vahar Sinai Oshan Kulak Yarad Alav Hashem Ba'esh. Har Sinai was all smoky because Hashem had descended upon it with the fire. And B'mayim, D'chsiv Gam Ovim Natfu Mayim. Right, in the Song of Devirah, where it speaks about the Torah, it speaks about the clouds dripped water. Right, elsewhere in Hazinu, right? Yarev Kamotar Likhi Tizal Katalim Rasi. Moshe Rabbeinu says, my words should come like the water and like the dew. So the Torah is fire, water, and midbar, three associations. So the Medrash concludes and says, Ma'elu b'chinam la'olam, afti v'etayra b'chinam la'olam. Just like these are free in the world, so too, divrei Torah are free in the world. The midbar is hefker, water falls from the heavens, fires, you know, they're not talking here obviously about energy, right, but talking, you know, about fire itself, you know, just take any two stones or pieces of wood and rub them together, and there you're able to produce a fire. It's not a resource that is owned. So too the Torah is going to be the same thing. So what's the meaning of this chazal? Right, midbar we have developed some understanding of. But the Maharal says like this. It says, first of all, you understand. Again, we've described many times here throughout the Torah, throughout the Tiferes Yisrael, is that Torah is something that man has to work to be able to integrate. As a human being, as a physical human being, we don't necessarily come by it naturally. Right? Yesterday was Perek Aleph of Pirkei Avos. Remember, that's the Maharal's explanation of misunim badin, to be slow and deliberate in judgment. Don't assume that the Torah is instinctual to you. Right? It's your humanity, your physicality makes it that to some degree it's counter-instinctual to you. Your instinct is going to be more materially grounded. So therefore, be slow, be deliberate, we understand you're bringing something in that's not naturally yours. So the Maharal says beautifully, something which is a resource, which is naturally owned by a person, is the very different than Torah. Torah isn't that which is naturally owned by the person. Something which a person can have bailus, can have ownership on, is not really the metaphor of Torah. That's the idea that these things are bechinam, that they're just out there. Nobody has ownership. Nobody claims ownership. Nobody's able to stake it out in that sense for themselves. That's the thing which these things have in common. So what's the three specific things? What are the three dimensions of midbar, of Eish, and of Mayim? So explains Maral beautifully as two hasberim, two explanations. The first explanation is that Midbar is, of course, the Torah itself. Right? The Torah itself, the content of the Torah itself, is something which, again, which is non-physical, which is not so naturally and easily connected to man. That's the metaphor to Midbar. Eish and Mayim, says the Maral, is representative of the Mayim and Eish, let's say, is representative of the positive and the negative. You know, Torah brings with it Tov and also avoidance of Ra. Failure in Torah, heaven forbid, brings Ra. That's what it says, right? Re'ein asati l'fanecha yoyim, esachayim v'esatov, esamaves v'esara. Behold, I have placed before you today life and good, death, heaven forbidden, and bad. That's the choice of Torah. That's the Tayvara of Torah. That's the option which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us, is granting us. And so, we say, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is placing these options before us, Hashem is giving us these things, Chaim and Tayv, Maves and Ra. So when we speak about Torah, we're not just speaking about ideas, about concepts, about truths. We're speaking about also that which is consequential. And the consequences aren't just natural consequences. Like, you know, if you eat this kind of thing, you get a stomach ache. Right? It's not physical, material consequences like sour milk. It's metaphysical consequences. And that's why, again, we're going to use these kind of things which are somehow Eish and Mayim in a certain sense, as much as water and fire are things which we see and perceive in the physical world. But again, they're not owned resources. So in that sense, they have this certain detachment. So water represents all the good, and Eish represents all the bad. Now, of course, you can have water for bad when it comes into your basement in a flood. You could have fire for good when you use it to heat your home and so on and so forth. But water, generally, we say, is, you know, you can't have life without water. Right? They're looking for little traces of water on Mars so they can figure out if there was ever life on Mars. Right? Fire is, as much as, again, its energy and its strength and its inability, but fire is carrying with it a connotation of harshness, of difficulty. Consumes, destroys. Of course there's an ambiguity, right? What greater ambiguity than what we read in the Torah yesterday? The fire came from Hashem and consumed the Karbonis, and the people were delighted. And the next moment the fire comes and consumes Nadav and Avihu, and the people are chastened. And they're devastated. But nevertheless, there's fire is hard and water is soft. And it's representing the Tov and the Ra. You know, it's an interesting thing, very important, interesting thing. He noted this in a related context in a Friday night question recently, is Shamayim. What's the root of the word Shamayim? Rashi says, Eish and Mayim, fire and water. So there are two things which come down from the heavens, fire and water. Right now, in the Maral's parlance over here, that's what he's saying. There's the Tov that comes, there's the Ra that comes, there's the positive things that come with the keeping of Torah, the negative things, heaven forbid. They're all heavenly. They're not just functions of the physical world. They're symbols of the connection between the spiritual world and the physical world, between the heaven and the earth. But they're all there. They're all part of it.
They also normally don't coexist, fire and water.
Correct.
But also, fire is the only of the two, the only one that we can create. We don't create water. We do create fire, and it goes up, not down.
Right. There are many interesting contrasts. You know, one of the things which when we asked the question Friday, we pointed out that normally our standard prayer revolves around rain. Right. The first prayer was that Hashem should bring the rain down from the heavens. In the Migdosh, the symbol of the ultimate acceptance in the Mikdash was that the fire came down from the heavens. The fire descended from the heavens. So, you know, when the fire descended from the heaven, then they knew that it was good. You know, it's something which has to be understood. You know, that phenomenon is something which has to be understood. Okay, so that's part of the comparison there. So those are the three dimensions in Pirush. Number one of the Maharal. Pirush number two, the second explanation which he gives of this idea of Midbar Eish and Mayim, is very different. very, very different. And this is the first sort of deviation from understanding Midbar. Well, in a certain sense, it's not such a deviation from his understanding of the Midbar, but it's adding a dimension. He says like this. Torah is something good. It's good, right? Ein toiv, ela Torah. Ki lekach toiv, nasati lachem. Right? Mishnah in Pirkei Avot. Also says, right, good is Torah. Torah is good, right? It's good stuff. Good stuff is, you know, it's, there are a lot of things which are good stuff. You know, filet mignon, good stuff. You know, other things, a lot of things, nice, beautiful delicacies which HaKadosh Baruch Hu offers us in the world. But the first is that it's good, and Mayim is that it's something which is good. But then the question is, if it's good, is it a must? Or it's a nice thing? Is it something which it has to be, which lacking it is going to be consequential? So that's the second stage, which is that it's Eish, it's fire. Fire is not something which you say, oh, it's a nice thing, you know, nice, you have some of it. Right? Eish is much more strong and hard. And again, you could have imagined that Mayim, as we say, is Mayim is vital. It's not just good. Like cream soda might be good, according to some opinions, not mine particularly. But but water isn't good. Water is vital. Water is vital. They went 3 days in the Midbar and they didn't find water. They were starving. They were thirsty. Right? Can't be 3 days without Torah. It's vital. But on the other hand, still, right? I'll read to you the way the Maral writes it. He said, you could say it's toiv, but ain't I mechuyev. Right? That would be the first thought. So he says, l'fikach be'elu gil v'nvarim nita toiv. B'mayim, because I'm of not toiv. That toiv came gishmei brachal olam. There are rains of blessing that come down to the world. Toiv is toiv ha'gomor, k'may shamar al zeh, yareth kamatar likhi. So the toiv is life for the world. It's positive in that sense. However, eish is strength. Instead of just the softness of blessing and of good, Eish is strength. It's b'chayzek u'v'chazak, b'chayzek u'v'taykef. And ha'lekei dvarei ka'eishnum Hashem, which implies that it's not just something nice and good and gentle, but it's something which is absolute. Right? So that's the way he understands the aspect of Mayim and the aspect of Eish. It's not just something which you have to do, it's something which is very good. And it's not just something which is very good, it's something which you have to do. And why is it given in the Midbar? So here the Maral says it's addressing another thing, another common potential misconception of Torah, which oftentimes he speaks about trying to show otherwise, and that is that Torah is not to be seen. Torah is not to be seen as just something to create a set of rules that can govern our society in a healthy and positive way. Every society needs rules. And we read, Eila ha-mishpatim asher tasim l'tayim. What are mishpatim? Well, mishpatim are the rules of law and order of the kind that every society has to have. The kind that if the Torah hadn't been given, you'd have to come up with them. Well, would you have come up with exactly them? Not necessarily, but by and large you have to come up with them or something like them.
The Robert's Rules of Order.
Yeah, or the laws which can pertain even in an unethical society. Even the mafia families will have their own rules somehow amongst themselves. They may not care about the guys who they fit for cement shoes, right? But amongst themselves they care because they have to. Not because of immorality, but because of where did morality go? If it doesn't matter for anybody else, but because, you know, they have to function in some society. They're not living completely by themselves. So, however, we learn that Torah, it's a fundamental belief of Torah is that Torah is not just a way of ruling society. Some of you may remember we discussed this in the Be'er HaGoyla. Right? The Maral says this on the Gemara, which says that Divrei Chachamim Kedarvoinei Suchem Asmeris Netuim Bali Asufes, that the Torah is not portable. The Torah is an absolute. And then I learned with you what the Ran writes in his Drashas, beautiful, very important thing in the Ran and the Drashas Haran, where he explains what the great sin was when the Jewish people asked for a king. Torah speaks about having a king. Right? Torah speaks about having a king. What was the terrible sin when the Jewish people asked for a king that Shmuel HaNavi was so upset? That Hashem said, you don't be upset. I'm the one who should be upset. It's a rejection of me more than it is a rejection of you. Says the Ran, beautiful thing. And he speaks about the separation of powers. He speaks about the different authorities that exist within the Jewish world. There is such a thing as a king, as an administration, and there is such a thing as a Sanhedrin, which is arguably a combination between the legislators and the judiciary. A combination of the two. We don't have two separate things. If there's a legislative branch, the prime legislative branch is the Rabbanu Shalom, and the secondary legislative branch, figuring out what the Rabbanu Shalom says, is the Sanhedrin, who's also, of course, the judiciary. It says the Maharal, the judiciary, or the legislative branch, can be seen really as an administrative function to make society run. But in the perception of Torah, it's not that way. The judiciary, the legislative, is to bring Hashem's truths to bear. And he says, I want to tell you something new and important. You know, sometimes you still need an administrative branch beyond that, not just to dig the water systems, but even for judgment. The Gemara says that there are times that Bezdin makin va'enshin shaloi min adin. Bezdin will hit somebody and punish somebody not according to the law. Right? This morning in the Daf Yomi, in the Gemara in Sanhedrin, the Gemara speaks about someone who hits people chronically that you chop his hand off. What's going on over here? So some say, oh, that's not literal. So they say, no, it is literal. What do you mean? Every time the Torah says you cut off his hand, it's not literal. Yeah, of course. When there's a rule in a specific case, a person hits somebody and there's an issue of compensation, so then we would say, you know, don't cut off his hand, just have him pay the, you know, it means money. That's what the Torah says. But here you're dealing with somebody who just poses a constant threat, and therefore sometimes the Bezdin has to take something out of just something that will be dramatic, drastic, that will work to just subdue the threat. You know, a person to get a death penalty according to the Din Torah has to be warned right before they did it. They have to have two witnesses. So you can have some great guy, some serial killer, right, who gets a big thrill. Every place he goes, he kills somebody. Nobody sees him. Nobody sees him do the action. He leaves, I don't know, a purple rose, and he says, I did it again, you know, or something like that. And in fact, you know what? He doesn't even try to hide his identity. Because he's part of a Jewish society. In the Jewish society, they won't kill him based on self-incrimination. So he'll come to the Bezdin and say, here, I'm the guy who leaves the purple roses. Just killed another one. Go look over there in that forest. Just killed another one. Bezdin won't be able to kill him, right? So says the Gemara, no. Sometimes Bezdin will say, yes, it doesn't fit the pure Din Torah. But our administrative function, our function to some degree as the king that has to make society run, says, this guy has to be punished. In other words, there's the judgment of truth, of divine truth, and then there's the judgment of order. And says the Ran, there's a separation. The king is the judgment of order. The Sanhedrin is the judgment of truth. What was the sin of the Jewish people? They said, we want the king to judge us like all the nations. Meaning that they didn't recognize the part of judgment is divine truth. And they were only thinking about order. Says the Maharal, that's part of the idea over here of the Torah being given in the Midbar, in the desert. The desert is not a society. If the Torah is just the tools and the rules to make society work, where's the place to give the Torah? Into society. But if the Torah is given in the Midbar, it's given in the desert. That's the same kind of expression that we say that the Torah preceded the creation of the world by X amount, 974 generations, whatever it is. What's the idea? Because it's not just a necessary response to the tensions which will arise within a society. The Torah is truth, eternal truth, truths that precede the world, that will outlive the world. The Torah is Midbar. It's there where there are no other considerations and no other needs that call upon it. It's there. It's there as an objective truth. That, he says, is the third dimension, potentially, of Torah being brought in the Midbar. Right? And I think, you know, it's like such a beautiful pshat that it supplants, it could potentially even supplant the other one, which we said before about, you know, it's an open matter. It's like a parallel pshat that the Maharal says that complements that which he said before. So that's another chazal about the Torah and the Midbar and the dimensions of what's happening there. Questions, comments before we go to the last chazal which he's going to be speaking about here?
Wasn't there order with Yisro's suggestion to create the different...
Yisro's suggestion was, in order to be able to make divine judgment available to everybody with ease, to have a whole structure where mishpat will be able to be dispensed. But it wasn't a change in the quality of the mishpat. It was a change in the access to the mishpat. That was what Yisrael was instituting. In the end, it was a good thing. It was a good thing. Okay. So, that's two. Anybody else? Anything else? So we have the final chazal. Final chazal is the Gemara in Shabbos, where the Gemara speaks about the various names which are given to the Midbar where the Torah was given. Interestingly, of course, there are different, these names are found all over the place in the Chumash, and they seem, some of them seem to talk about the same thing, and some of them represent certainly different areas of the Midbar, like Midbar Paran and Midbar Tzin, and so on and so forth. And it tells you besides the Kash over there, you know, these aren't all the same place. They aren't all the same place, but the Taisus addresses Maral, says, look, it's still basically one continuous Midbar, and it's all that area of the Jewish people, nascent development with Torah, and therefore it's appropriate for the Gemara to discuss all of them as names of one basic general entity called the Midbar of Torah. So what was this place? So it's called Midbar Sinai, as we know. It's called Midbar Chorev, it's called Midbar Tzin, it's called Midbar Paran, it's called Kadesh. All these different names. So what do each of these names symbolize? So the Gemara says as follows. My Har Sinai, Shayorda Sinai, Sina Lemakishe Hashem. It from there, Sina came down. Right, the Maral is a different girsa than we have printed in our Gemara. Lemakishe Hashem is to the deniers of Hashem. In our Gemara, the girsa is LaAkum. Very often in our Gemara, they change it to Akum because Akum means people who worship the stars and the signs of the zodiac. You know why they use that term in the Gemaras? Because none of their contemporary non-Jews worshipped the stars anymore. So it was really a term which was put in by censors or by those who were being sensitive to the potential of censorship. They spoke about people who worshipped stars, and that way they could say to the people, oh, we weren't talking about you. Right? But usually the term which was being used was either Goyim, Nochrim, or in this case the Maral seemed to have a text of Machishi Hashem, the deniers of God. So from there came down Sina, hatred to them. Right? Some say hatred to us from them. Some say that they were somehow now rejected. In the choice of the Jewish people, there are those who are outside of the choice. Midbar Tzin is from Nitztavu. They were commanded there. Midbar Kodesh was Niskadshu. They were sanctified there. Midbar Paran is from the term paru v'ravulav, they were fruitful and they grew there. Midbar Sinai is shiorda sina l'makishe Hashem. There the hatred came down to the deniers of Hashem, and finally, that's the one they mean now, Midbar Kedemais is shenitna kedumolav, that the Torah which was of precedent, which came first before anything else, came there. And what was its name? These are all sort of nicknames. What was its real name? Was Chayrev. And it's different. Rabbi Avohu says its real name was Sinai. And Har Chayrev was because you're at Churban L'machishe Hashem Olav Adkan. So says Maral, what's the idea between all of these names of Torah? So he says the essential name is Chayrev, according to the first, because Midbar is Chayrev, like we started off this parak, it's empty. It's not filled with human, earthy, chimer, material development and stuff like that. That's what makes it so welcoming of Torah. But what's the thing is tzivui is nitztave olav. Okay, so this part of the perek I think is, it's the most challenging. I could repeat it to you easily, but it brings up concepts which are, to me, they don't just come up here, they come up in other places, and they're hard for me to understand because of the irony within them. Okay, but the first one isn't so bad, isn't so hard, shouldn't say that, isn't so hard. Midbar, okay, this I guess would be the introductory comment. Midbar is associated with din. We find this all over the place, this kind of a notion that the midbar, the desert, is associated with din. And part of it is because of that desolation. Din is vulnerability. Din is judgment, right? Judgment can eradicate, can destroy. Right? It's called, you know what the Torah calls the land of the desert, when they would send out the Soyer Lazozel, that goat that was going to be thrown off a cliff on Yom Kippur, was to Eretz Gezerah. Eretz Gezerah. Gezerah means what? Cutting, decrees, judgments. Right? Gezerah. The midbar is associated with din. The harshness of the midbar, the emptiness of the midbar is associated with din. So we say that's a place of tzivu, of makom shenitztavu Yisrael. Instructions are gezeiros, decrees which are given to us by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It makes sense that the midbar is midbar tzin. It's the desert of tzivui, of instruction, of hard and specific command. Yeah?
I thought perhaps that because the midbar is, if you will, flat, it's minimalistic, that's the same. That is the same as the Gezerah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it is the minimal. It's not adding any chesed at all. There's no aspect of who you are. It's just this is what the story is.
Okay. That's a nice twist on the din thing. Okay. Good. The Shem Hasheni, the next name of it is that it was called Midbar Kodesh. Sheniskachu Yisrael Lov, because the Jewish people were sanctified upon it. So he says that we explained already, that the midbar is suitable for Kedusha because of the absence of physicality which is there. It's called Midbar Poran Shaparu Varavolov, and here we get to the ambiguity. They were fruitful and they grew there. What does that have to do with midbar? So says the Maharal, and this again, this is the ironic concept, says that din is what leads to being fruitful and growing, right? This is the irony. We said midbar is din because of gezeir, because of its emptiness, but it's also it's being fruitful and multiplying. And Maral says this, indicates this with many significant things. What's the name which is used for of Hashem, which is used for creation, creating the world? Bracha, bracious, bara, elol, kim. The name of din in the whole process of creation, all 6 days of creation, there's only one name of Hashem which is used, and that's the same name which is associated with judgment. And so you say, because Hashem created the world originally with the midah of judgment. He wanted it to exist according to judgment. But there's something there about growth, development, creation within the world coming through din. That's the way we find it. And he brings other things. Kasher yanu aysam kein yirbe v'chein yifretz. The more that the Egyptians punished them, afflicted them, the more they grew, the more they developed. Din, in its own way, allows things to develop, to grow. It's such an irony, isn't it? But listen to the same irony, right? What does it say in the beginning of Lech Lecha? Hashem says to Avram, I'll make you a great nation. That's Avram. Avram became Gadol. Vavorecha, I will bless you. I'll give you bracha. What's that? That's Elokei Yitzchak. The first person that it says that he was blessed was Yitzchak. What's Yitzchak associated with? What midah? What character trait? Din. Din is usually containment and limitation. But the same thing is also connected to bracha. So, I'm telling this to you. I'm telling you what the Maharal says over here. That's why it's the place that paru v'ravu alav, that they were fruitful and multiplied. They grew. They flourished there in the midbar, in that same Eretz Gezerah. But it's an irony. And it's not something we're going to resolve now in the couple minutes that we have before I have to run and leave. It's called as well Midbar Sinai, because Sinai came down to the nations from it. And the idea is because it was a choice, Sinai was bringing HaKadosh Baruch Hu close to the Jewish people. Bringing the Jewish people close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and when that happens, when you choose one, you have those who are spurned by the lack of choice. I think I told you, and this is on this Gemara, Rav Moshe Shapira says, that the same letters that spell Bochar, chose, also spell Chorav, destroyed. You choose one, and then there's everybody who's rejected because they weren't chosen. And so that's part and parcel of what happens there at Har Sinai. And the Torah is in Midbar Kedemais, it's Kadma Lailam, the same idea that we just said before. It's not necessitated by society and the need to have an order there as a result, but it precedes the world. And its name is Chayrev. Everything stems from the fact that it's Chayrev. And the fact that it's empty, that it's desolate, that it therefore is the place which is open to being taken over by a new, completely new system, the system called Torah. I think there's more to discuss in these nuances, especially that irony of Paru v'Ravu versus Gezeira, emptiness versus being fruitful, multiply. That's a chronic issue, Mirat Hashem, and plain to catch, so I have to catch myself. Okay, good morning. Good